Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Trupanion Medical Insurance for the life of your pet is a proud sponsor of Pure Dog Talk. Trupanion invites you to sign up for their breeder support program. This program allows breeders to provide their buyers with special offers to help protect the puppy in the event of any unexpected accidents or illnesses as they transition to their new home. By clicking the link on my partner page, you can join the program today. Additionally, Trupanion will provide you with informational materials for your puppy kits, and they'll offer one-on-one support, all at no cost to you. Sign up at the partner page today and mention Pure Dog Talk sent you. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and I have here our monthly conversation with our very, very favorite veterinary voice, Dr. Marty Greer. And I'm a little serious tonight because we are going to talk about a topic that I personally am affected by. It's about brachycephalic breeds. As an owner and breeder with my partner of pug dogs, this has a lot of bearing on me personally. So I told Marty as we were starting this conversation, I was going to have to watch myself that I didn't start screaming randomly. So welcome, Marty. Thank you for joining us to talk about what is a pretty hot button and very timely topic for us this evening.
And emotional. Absolutely.
And very emotional. Yes, that whole screaming part. Okay, so to set this up, in recent weeks, this has been very recently, within the last month, the Dutch Pug Club has announced immediate effect that the breeding of any pug dog with a nose less than a third of the length of its skull has been banned. Now, anyone who has ever seen a pug dog, an English bulldog, a French bulldog, a Boston Terrier, a Shih Tzu, a Pekingese, any of these breeds that we consider brachycephalic do not meet that criteria. And this law has been pushed. And like I told Marty, I went and did Google Translate on the Dutch website so I could actually get an understanding of what was going on here. There was a law passed by the government. The actual government passed a law in 2014 that it is against the law in Holland to breed flat-faced dogs, brachycephalic dogs. And the reason for the pug dog making this decision recently is that the government has announced that they're going to be following up on this law now. So I wanted Marty to talk to us about a couple things. First of all, the veterinary piece of brachycephalic dogs. And secondly, switching hats to the NAIA hat and discussing legislation and issues that can conceivably impact the United States and going forward. So yay, Marty, you're my arbiter of all things good.
Oh, boy, that's a heavy load. Okay.
Go. Brachycephalic breeds. Let's talk about, however anybody wants to say it, the flat-faced dogs, the short-nosed dogs, brachycephalic will be, you know, nice and scientific about it. All of these breeds, I personally own them. I personally went best in show with a pug dog in Wisconsin on a day that it was 105 on the thermometer and 80% humidity. So this story about how, yeah, no, that's for real. The story about how pug dogs can't survive and his mother lived until she was 17 years old. So let's address this from an actual medical perspective.
Sure. And there are extremes in any breed that you look at. You know, it doesn't matter if you're talking about a corgi or a brachycephalic or, you know, whatever, a Labrador. We, as Americans, as dog breeders, have found traits that we like about our dogs, and we continually push the envelope until we've got them more and more and more extreme. But what we really have to look at is what is the impact of that on the dog? And yes, we see a lot of bulldogs in our practice. We see a lot of pugs. We see a lot of brachycephalics in general in our practice. Today I had a bulldog in for an appointment. I see this dog every 5 weeks because he needs to have his anal sacs emptied, not because he has any other health problems. He's 10 and a half years old. He's a picture of health. The owner is very careful about keeping him fit and keeping his weight good and taking good care of him. And this dog looks great. And I've seen him every 5 weeks for his entire life. So this is not something that I'm unfamiliar with or inexperienced with. So there's a lot of dogs that do very, very well as long as they're managed well. And any dog that becomes overweight is going to end up with respiratory problems. We see it in Labradors. We see it in Golden Retrievers. It's not exclusive.
I was just going to say, yeah, the Bernese Mountain Dog that used to come into the boarding kennel that I worked at that weighed, and I do not exaggerate, 250 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Right.
How is that healthy?
So it's really not exclusively about the brachycephalic traits. And frankly, the traits are what are very appealing to people. People like the infantile short face with a big round eye, and that's an appealing look to a lot of people. So that's why we've produced so many of these breeds and so many individuals in these breeds that they've become very, very popular. French Bulldogs, oh my goodness.
Right.
They're everywhere. Cavalier King Charles Spaniels, very frequently seen. It's, I think, the number two most popular dog in England. So there's a lot of these dogs that are out there and handled very well with any situation. If you keep the dog in good health, at good weight, you keep them fit, you take good care of their teeth, all the things that need to be done as basic, good, healthy dog maintenance. And it doesn't matter if you're talking about yourself or your dog. All those things are really important for long-term good health. So I think we need to focus a lot more on the overall health of the patient and not on their breed trait.
Right.
Now, bulldogs originally were bred for a purpose. They were bred to have a short face because they were bulldogs. They would grab the bull and they would help to move bulls. Back in the day that bulls were kept in larger numbers on farms, they could be pretty dangerous animals. So bulldogs were really meant to be a dog that managed bulls. Not all the brachycephalic breeds have that same history, but we have to recognize that, first of all, there is a function. It's an appealing trait to a lot of people. So without overstepping too far, we really need to look at what the point of these dogs, the appeal to people are, and how we can perpetuate that and still have an appealing breed type dog without losing sight of what we really initially wanted them to be. And that's a great companion for us.
Right, right. And I think, I mean, with the exception of bulldogs, clearly, Frenchies, pugs, Shih Tzu, Pekingese, these were developed in cold climates in Asia, where they were, for the most part, companions. I mean, that's right. That was their job, was to sit on somebody's lap. They were not produced. They were not designed, they were not bred, they were not conceived of, they were not carried on for hundreds, in many cases, more than hundreds of years, to run long distances in the Sahara Desert.
No, not even close. And they were meant to keep your lap warm.
Yeah.
They were developed in the days before there was central heat, before right. There was those kinds of amenities. So the very wealthy would have a dog to keep them warm. It would sit
yes.
in their lap. It would sleep in their bed. It would help keep them warm. I would really prefer that to a lot of other choices.
Right, right. It's fascinating to me when I read, as I say, this is a very hot button issue, and I want to be not dismissive of anyone. But when I read people that say, you know, the United States or the show dog breeders or confirmation breeders have ruined these breeds by exaggerating them. And I go back to my books and I look at pictures of pug dogs from China in the 1800s
mm-hmm.
that have literally the same face they have today.
Yeah. Yeah. We haven't really changed that much.
No.
And one of the things that I have concerns about is I was at the Humane Society Veterinary Medical Association meeting last January. I was in attendance of it because I was really interested in hearing what this topic was about. And it was the brachycephalics and the risks to their health and the concerns that they have, because of course, many people are familiar with the documentary that was done on the dogs in
right.
Great Britain
right.
and what has gone on with that. But the concern I have is government in England is now starting to tell breeders what they can and cannot breed. And frankly, that ends up taking us down a pretty slippery slope. And America was built by people who left England and other European countries who didn't want to be told by the government what to do. So we have many generations of people that said, hey, I'm more independent than that. This is what I want to do. I don't want to be told what to do. So we know that the kennel clubs in Germany and in England and in a lot of other places have mandated how people breed their dogs. And we have maintained that independence in America, that we're going to breed the dogs to the type and the style and the look that we choose, because saps the independent spirit of the United States citizens. So I really fear for what's going to start happening, because we're starting to see some of that start to trickle into our society. Where are we going to continue to dock tails? Are we going to continue to crop ears? Are we going to continue to be allowed to breed the dogs of the appearance and the style and the type that we have developed our vision for? And this can really very quickly escalate into something that I think people are going to be maybe not real pleased with being told by a kennel club or by a governmental body what they can and cannot do. People are pretty offended by being told that they have to do spay and neuter, or that they can't sell dogs in pet stores. So these are really important issues for us to be discussing before it gets out of hand any further than it already has.
I absolutely agree. And as we were talking just before we got on air, you know, we've watched the fallout from the animal rights agenda that has invaded much of Europe and parts of the British Islands and is now showing up. We see it in various provinces in Canada where crop and dock bans are coming online. And so, you know, the part that is, or the piece of this puzzle that is, I think, so important to focus on is what you were just talking about, in that they came first for, right? They came for the greyhounds. They came for this. They came for that. And the understanding, and now we're going to kind of switch gears from the vet mode to the legal mode of your expertise, but the understanding that there are organizations and groups out there who flat do not want people to own pets at all, and who would like to dictate what our pets look like and how we interact with them.
Right. And that's the bottom line, is the ultimate goal of a number of these organizations, whether you want to believe it or want to accept it or not, is that their goal is for us not to own pets any longer. So they don't want us to eat meat. They don't want us to own dogs. There's a lot of things that these slow and gradual, or at least appearing slow and gradual, changes have started to happen. And it's changed a lot in the last 20 years. And a lot of things that weren't the norm a long time ago are the norm now. And it's becoming really disturbing. Back in the day, when the heyday of the kennels and the large kennels and the large breeding kennels and the places that were really impacting the development of a lot of these really great breeds that we have now, that, you know, back in the 1800s, that's just not even possible anymore, because the legislation is such that you can't own a number of dogs in places. And it's just really had a huge impact. And we're seeing a dwindling number of breeders and a dwindling number of places that you can purchase dogs. I was just on a webinar last night that was discussing the dog shortage that's impending in the United States. Mm-hmm. And it's true, we don't have enough dogs. If you look at the numbers of dogs that are being produced in AKC kennels, in commercial kennels, and coming out of rescues, it becomes pretty evident that there's millions of dogs coming across the border from other countries illegally and legally, mostly illegally. And so there's going to be some pretty significant changes in dog ownership and dog availability and dog styles and types and how they look. If you look at a Doberman that doesn't have a docked tail and doesn't have a cropped ear, it looks like a black and tan coonhound. To your point of losing breed type, right, we're going to start to see that happen. A lot of our commercial breeders are breeding for traits that aren't the traits that we have historically bred for as AKC confirmation breeders. So it doesn't mean that they're breeding bad dogs. It means that they're not breeding dogs with the same eye toward form and function that we've been breeding for. And I think people have lost a lot of the understanding of what that form and function really is.
Right.
Dogs were bred to serve a lot of different purposes. And so the conformation of the dog isn't just for the beauty contest kind of thing that people have come to believe. You know, it's like, oh, well, I don't need a show dog. Well, actually, you do want a show dog, because I'll tell you what, those dogs are put together the way they need to be to continue to be able to work in the field. If they're field dogs, if they're hunting dogs, if they're herding dogs, if they're working dogs.
Even if they're lap dogs. And I mean,
right,
again,
they are.
I go back to these photographs, and I was following along a lot of social media, jumping up and down and shouting, and a lot of people expressing opinions, valid or invalid, I think isn't necessarily the most important point. The point is everybody has an opinion on this. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I think it's so critical that the vast majority of the universe understand that those of us who actually own and breed pugs are the ones best served to tell you how to have a dog that can breathe and perform. It's another story. I have people who own wire hair pointers who also had pug dogs, and their pug dogs went hunting with them. When they went hunting, the pug dog would retrieve the spent shotgun shell.
It's a short retrieve.
I'm not kidding. I mean, but it walked with them. It's not like that pug dog got carried in a backpack, dude. I'm telling you.
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. I'm so excited, and I just can't hide it.
Yeah, I know, I promised I was never going to sing again. But I'm saying, our new audiobook is available now. Whoop! Yeah! Pure Dog Talks, How to Stack Your Dog and Other Important Talks is a 2-CD set featuring early mentoring episodes from the podcast, tips, and previously unrecorded pep talks. This is a power-packed opportunity for folks who don't want to search our exhaustive 260-some-odd episode library for just the topic they're looking for. This 2-hour series is a great resource for breeders and mentors, 4-H leaders, anybody that's looking for a straight-line trajectory from what kind of dog should I get to raising a show dog, how to stack and move with your dog, to counting championship points for your new dog. Super easy to purchase. Just drop PayPal $25 a book to Laura at puredogtalk.com and make sure audiobook is in the comments and that your mailing address is included, because shipping is free. That's on me. And I'll have it to you in just a few days. Breeder and mentor bundles are available. I'll give you a 10% discount on 5 or more. And this is a very limited print run. So get your order in today. May not be here tomorrow. It is so important to understand, and I can list example after example after example. And because you personally, I'm not speaking to you, obviously, you, John Q. Public, has only ever seen poorly bred examples of any of these brachycephalic breeds, does not mean that everyone needs to be told how to breed the dogs to meet a standard that is healthy.
Or that they can't breed them at all.
Right.
So it would be a very different world to not be able to pick some of the breeds that you're able to pick. And that's one of the concerns that I have about not having the AKC, not having the breeders producing the dog and then being forced to take a rescue dog. Yeah, there's a lot of great dogs that come through rescue, but I'm going to tell you that when I go to buy a dog, I want to know how tall it's going to be. I want to know how long it's going to be, how much it's going to weigh, how it's going to act, what kind of coat care I'm going to need to give it. I don't want a tall dog that can reach the kitchen counters. I would like having my Corgis and my Danish Swedish Farm Dogs because I know they're going to stay small. Right. And if you don't know what you're going to get, whether it's a rescue dog or a mixed breed dog or, you know, whatever it turns out to be, I want to have a predictability. When I go buy a car, I want to know the predictability of it. I want to know that what features it has. Right. I don't want to buy a minivan if I want a sports car, and I don't want a sports car if I want to buy a minivan. Right. So I want to be able to make those selections. And without the traits that are predictable about the purebred dog for, like I said, coat care and activity levels and behavior. And, you know, if I want a protection dog, I want to go get a dog that's a protection dog. And if I don't, if I want the happiest little dog on the block, I want to know that that's what I'm going to get.
If you want a pug dog,
go get a pug
dog.
You
don't want a dog. The two crossbreedings that I read about, and my understanding, there have been two crossbreeding experiments in Holland through the Dutch Pug Club, one of them to Staffordshire Bull Terrier and one of them to Shiba Inu. Now, I own a Shiba Inu who happens to think he's a pug dog, but trust me, the typical Shiba Inu personality is not that of a pug dog. And so if your goal is to acquire a pug dog that will snuggle with you and be happy every single day and not have an aggressive bone in its silly little face,
then you want a pug.
Then you need a pug, not some pug cross thing.
Right. Yeah. And the Puggle Beagle pug cross, that turned out to be a bit of a disaster when that was attempted here in the U.S. a number of years ago. I never met a Puggle that didn't try to eat one of my staff members. So I want predictability, and I want to know exactly what I'm getting into, because for the next 15 to 17 years, I want to know exactly what I've got. And as I've gotten older, I've come to appreciate that size makes a bigger difference.
Yes.
I won't own a dog personally that I can't pick up and carry.
Right.
So at one time, I could pick up the Bernese Mountain Dogs and carry them if I needed to. Yeah, well, that's not happening anymore.
No, that time is past now, isn't it?
Yep, that ship sailed. But I could, at one point, if I needed to lift one onto a grooming table or carry it down the hall, I could do that.
Right.
And so I think those are really important things that we've forgotten about when it's come to this. And we've gotten so politically correct about certain things that we've lost track of the value of the predictability, the importance of independence, and the ability of our American public to decide what they want to own and live with and be comfortable with. So if you want a little dog that's going to sleep in the bed with you at night, that's great. But if that's not what you're looking for, if you're looking for the, you know, the German Shepherd that's going to keep people off your property when your husband, the truck driver, is gone for a week at a time,
right,
then that's what you need.
Yeah. The pug wouldn't help you very much in that instance.
No. I don't know any pugs that would keep anybody out of the house.
They're like, come on in. So, come on, how you doing?
Yeah, I know. The TV's over here. The silver's over there. They never use it. Go ahead, help yourself.
Have at it.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that it was very interesting as I was reading again, you know, social media, as you and I have discussed on more than one occasion, has its advantages and it has many, many, many not advantages.
Yes.
How's that?
True.
And the idea of people sort of expounding about their anecdotal experience with whatever poorly bred brachycephalic breed they might have seen, and literally arguing with people who have 30 years in these breeds of experience. Can you help? Can you kind of weigh in on this a little bit? Because I'm hoping somebody will listen to a voice of reason here. You know, listen to people who actually know stuff.
Right. So the brachycephalic syndrome is basically, it's a collection of disorders that are all related to having bred dogs to have a shorter and shorter and shorter face. So it means that their tongue is kind of long and big for their body style. It means that their trachea has gotten smaller. It means that their nostrils or their nares are a little bit more narrow. And it's just a whole combination of, sometimes it's an elongated soft palate where the palate overlaps too much of the epiglottis. So the dog is noisy when it's breathing. It can lead to secondary air saccules in the airway. So all of this shortening and changing of the appearance has led to that. But those are all traits that can be very carefully selected for by breeders. So I have breeders that come in with bulldogs and their dogs are quiet breathers and pugs the same way.
Yep.
There are absolutely a number of individuals. This is not the rare individual. This is the norm of the individual that is a quiet, comfortable breather. And those are the kinds of things that breeders understand in their lines and can work toward without being told exactly what proportions that they need to go to establish. So without being dictated the specifics of it, you simply can give people a different set of criteria and explain, you know, what your goals are. And if you're looking for a pug dog that's a quiet breather, and you go visit the mother and the father, and they're quiet breathers, and the puppy has nice nares, and apparently is a quiet breather at the time, then those are the things that you start looking for.
Right.
So there's absolutely ways to carefully breed for this without breeding toward that. Dachshund breeders are careful in breeding them to avoid back problems.
Yep.
And, you know, there's just a lot of traits that we know how to select for.
Right. And we do it in every single breed.
Right.
You know, we breed away from epilepsy, or we breed away from hip dysplasia, or we breed away. I mean, there are ways to manage these things. I have two pug bitches sitting out in my kennel right now. It's probably 90 degrees outside. They're both outside running around. One of them breathes better than the other one. Easy. The one that doesn't breathe as well has a long history. The whole, you know, they just, certain lines are better. And so know that and work with that and keep trying to improve that.
Right. And as we become better and better at DNA testing, there's a lot of things that we can test for that we couldn't test for before.
Right.
But if you're just thoughtful about what you do and you understand the genetics behind your dog, you're in the best position of anybody to make good breeding decisions. And I don't know a single breeder that gets up tomorrow morning and says, you know what, I'm going to breed a dog with a bad temperament, bad hips, bad elbows, and thyroid disease with allergies and seizures.
Yeah.
I mean, like, what breeder
like,
says
go
that?
Do that?
Nobody. Yeah, nobody. They all have a goal of making an improvement of one generation after the next.
Absolutely. And I think that's so important to understand. And I think it's important for people also to understand that the public perception of all brachycephalic breeds can't breathe is erroneous.
Right.
Okay. Let's start there. Number one. Number two, if you interact with people who are longtime responsible preservation breeders of these brachycephalic breeds and talk to them, they'll help you learn more about this and how they work within breed type to manage good health, longevity, and all the rest of it. And number three, an understanding that if you breed Great Danes and think it's okay to say you can't breed pug dogs because of the brachycephalic, you need to understand more about what the animal rights agenda is doing in this planet. Would that be a safe statement?
Yeah, it really is. So it's just not as simple as saying we're going to stop breeding pugs.
Yeah.
Because the next dog is going to be the next one. It just depends on who's in the eyesight next.
Right.
Because it's not going to just stop there. It's going to be one dog after the next and one trade after the next. And it's just going to snowball to the point that we don't end up with anything that is left anymore. The number of dogs we have in the U.S. and the demand that people have, the companionship, the family member status of dogs, all those things have really changed a lot over the last 20 to 40 years. And if we don't provide the American public with what they're asking for as breeders here, those needs are going to be met by breeders outside the United States. And the countries that are currently exporting dogs for import into the United States are not going to be following the same guidelines for animal welfare that we can manage here in the United States. So if you're getting dogs from third world countries, if you're getting dogs from Eastern European countries where they don't have the kind of standards of genetic care, because they don't, and the kind of standards that we expect for our dogs to be raised in as far as socialization and hygiene and good living conditions.
Veterinary care.
Great veterinary care. Those dogs are going to start infiltrating into our lives. And, you know, I don't know a lot of rescue dogs, and I say this with a very heavy heart, that I don't see a lot of rescue dogs that come through that don't have some kind of a behavioral issue, whether it's anxiety or some other issue, because we didn't have the kind of breeders managing those dogs' early lives that we have as the kind of breeder that you and I are, where I make sure my dogs are socialized and well-handled and, you know, all the things that it takes to develop a well-rounded, self-assured dog that is fun and easy to live with. I see so many people with rescue dogs that struggle their whole life to try and make the life as good as they can for these dogs that started off really rough.
Right.
You know, it's not like somebody, again, did this on purpose, but it's the reality of most of the dogs that we see coming through with behavioral issues are dogs that came through rescue.
Right.
And it's a very sad event.
Yeah. And it's real. They wound up in rescue for a reason, right? I mean, that's the problem. Sorry, that's the facts.
Yeah. And we have the opportunity at this point, we're at a real crossroads in the United States to make some decisions about how we want our dogs to look and be bred and to be raised and how this all has to work. And we're going to have to rely more heavily on our commercial breeders, like it or not. And I don't think that puppy mill is an acceptable alternative term to that because it's really not. I work heavily with the Amish breeders, the Mennonite breeders, and a lot of other people who are doing a really outstanding job of improving their programs. And, you know, I was reading an article on the Michigan website yesterday about animal law, and it started off defining what a puppy mill was, and then it continued to use the term inappropriately through the rest of the paper. And I just thought, oh my gosh, this is what people are reading, and they don't understand what the concerns are. So we are at a crossroads in the United States. This is our opportunity to say the animal rights people are wrong. The animal rights people should not be able to dictate this conversation. And it's time for us as animal welfare people and not animal rights people to say, this is what we have for needs, for expectations. These are the goals we have. These are the number of dogs we're going to need in our upcoming generations to serve the needs of the American public. And we need to get a handle on this conversation and get it under control. One of the points that was made is that there are 27 land-grant colleges in the United States, and only one of them has a program about dog husbandry. And why is that? Why isn't dog husbandry something that we're still teaching at the high school level, at the college level, and in a lot of other places? Because there's so many things that we could do so well with what we know now about dog genetics and dog behavior and managing dog behavior and genetics, how much of an improvement we've made over the last several generations of dogs, that we could really make a big difference in what our next populations of dogs look like for the American public as pet owners, because it's not going away. It's just going to get better and better all the time.
Right. Okay. Well, Marty, thank you very, very much. I so appreciate you always are so good to us and you take time out of your day that is always crazy. And I just want a public shout out. Thank you.
Well, thanks for having me. I surely enjoy this. And I'm more than happy to carry on this conversation with anybody that wants to converse with me about it. So keep it going.
Excellent. Well, I think that, you know, these are conversations we have to have. And I hashtag take back the conversation, right?
Yep, for sure. And the National Animal Interest Alliance's annual meeting is coming up in October, October 26th to the 28th. And it'll be in Orlando. And the topic is babies. I'm not sure any more than that because we haven't fully rounded out the program yet. But it is going to be talking about babies of a number of different species.
Awesome.
So be sure to think about joining us. We'd love
definitely
to have you.
Everybody needs to be there. That is a big one. So, all right. Well, Marty, thank you so very much. And we will talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to Laura at puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.